shoulder fake to the rack. Oh, my goodness. Wayne Wade.
Caps up a three.
Bam! Jimmy Butler's big time onion.
Side jumper off the mark.
Oh, back of right hand. Felicia right in the mug of Miles Plumlee.
Throw it.
Oh, my.
Down,
gosh.
Big man. Throw it down.
On the new home of the Chicago Bulls, this is Chicago Bulls Live. And now, here's Steve Cashel.
And welcome in, everyone, to Chicago Bulls Live here on WLS AM 890, our weekly program inside the world of Chicago Bulls basketball and the NBA. I'm Steve Cashel. Today on the show, an interview with former Bulls head coach Doug Collins and also former Bulls guard John Paxson, who happens to be the executive vice president of basketball operations for the Chicago Bulls. We begin with another former Bull who played in the 70s with our Chicago Bulls squad, Mickey Johnson from Lindblom High School in Chicago. He played at Aurora College, selected by the Portland Trailblazers back in the 1974 NBA draft, the fourth round pick, 56th overall. Immediately traded to the Chicago Bulls, had a great career with the Bulls in 12 solid years in the NBA. Mickey, how are you?
I'm doing great, Steve. How are you today?
It is great to see you here at the United Center and back with the Bulls. Take me back to Lindblom High School. Did you grow up a Bulls fan?
Oh, most definitely. I used to watch Bob Love all the time in Midwest Boys Club. Matter of fact, Jerry Sloan, Tom Boerwinkle, all of them played back in the day at the Midwest Boys Club, Martin Luther King Boys Club.
Fantastic. So drafted by the Portland Trailblazers, how happy were you and how soon was it when you were traded to the Bulls?
Well, after I was drafted by Portland in the fourth round, I went to one practice with Portland. You know, I was drafted along with Bill Walton at the time. And the Bulls traded me for a third-round draft pick if I made the team.
Really? What kind of pressure was that?
That was a lot of pressure, considering I was the fourth rookie. You know, might have drafted four rookies that year. Cliff Pondexter, Bobby Wilson, Leon Bimbo, and myself.
Wow. And take me back to when you first met Dick Motta, because I understand it was while working at his camp at Aurora College, which you also played for Aurora College, correct?
That is correct. What happened was, during my junior year at Aurora, Motta did not have enough players to practice with during the preseason. So he asked my coach if I could come in and play. And, you know, I said yes right away.
Yeah.
And the only reason I was able to do it because I was in NAIA instead of NCAA.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
So you got a chance to work out the NBA players?
Worked out with them. At the time was Billy Harris. Can't think of the guard. Mark Sibley.
Okay.
They had drafted. So I got a chance to see what was really going on when I made it there the next year.
Fantastic. And what was Dick Motta like? He was our longtime head coach of the Bulls.
Dick Motta was, I would say, he's my godfather as far as the NBA. He really taught me how to be a professional, along with the other five all-star players, Bob Love, Nate Thurman, Jerry Sloan, Norm Van Leer, and Bob Love. So I learned how to be a professional, how to approach the game. So he was very instrumental.
Visiting with Mickey Johnson, former Chicago Bull, averaged 17 points, 10 rebounds during the 76-77 season. Just his second NBA season, and he was with the Chicago Bulls, and the following year, 18 points and 9 rebounds. So you made a pretty big impact. Your rookie year, not as good, but they don't play rookies a lot, you know.
Well,
but what was it like when you made your breakthrough and all of a sudden averaged a double-double?
What happened was after we lost in the championship, Western Conference Championship against Golden State, the Bulls went into a tailspin. We were losing, and at halftime, during the half part of the season, Motta just made a change in the lineup, and he put me in there to start, and I was a starter ever since.
Fantastic. What do you remember about the Bulls in those days and the old Chicago Stadium?
Well, during the playoff against Portland, you're talking about getting loud. It was loud.
I was there, Mickey. I was there with a couple of high school buddies. I remember going against Bill Walton and Maurice Lucas.
Right. It was loud. And what I love about the stadium is more intimate than it is here. United Center is a great stadium, but the intimacy is not as strong as it was at the stadium.
The old barn, right?
That's right.
Cold locker rooms and probably cold showers, right?
I have to remind people sometimes that back in the day, we had to wash our own uniforms.
Is that right?
That is correct.
My goodness. Maybe provide you. They didn't have bottled water back then, right?
No bottled water. Straight from the cup, you know, out the Gatorade container. And gave us water like that.
And there were no private flights, right? You guys flew commercial?
All commercial flights. Sometimes it was very cumbersome because a lot of times we were late getting to games because of the flight situation due to the weather. It was kind of difficult at times.
Absolutely. Visiting with Mickey Johnson, who was also nicknamed the Rubber Band Man. Who nicknamed you that, Mickey?
When I made it to Milwaukee, John McLaughlin called me the Rubber Band Man because everybody was knocking me around, but I would bounce back up. So.
Is that right?
That's the reason he gave me the Rubber Band Man.
Someone else said you were the first ever point forward in the NBA, and one of the best ever was Scottie Pippen. You think he got that from you?
I would like to think I set the groundwork for it. I was very fortunate to be able to handle the ball back in the day. People my size at 6'10 were not as equipped in handling the ball back then as they are today. So I feel I would like to take the credit that I'm the original point forward.
Absolutely. That's great stuff. Mickey Johnson is our guest here on Chicago Bulls Live. I'm Steve Cashel. You later became a head coach at Malcolm X College. What was it like to be a head coach? Was that one of your goals after playing in the NBA for 12 years, Mickey?
No, I really didn't go out to coach. After my NBA career, I wanted to get into real estate and pest control. But I went coach because I felt I need to give back to some of the players. It was interesting in Malcolm X College. My greatest achievement is that I was the first coach to have players graduate from Malcolm X College, and that really made me feel good.
Absolutely. You were also a Cook County Deputy Sheriff. You went into politics a little bit, didn't you?
Yes, I did. I worked with the Sheriff's Department for 19 years. Work with the what they call the SWAT program, the Sheriff Work Alternative Program, would help non-offenders not go to jail. So they just do some community service work. I helped initiate that. It was great working for the Sheriff Department, but it's also a lot of sadness when you see young men, especially in the juvenile courts, and not the fault, all their faults, because their family background may not be as supportive as other families.
Absolutely. And I mentioned the political background as well, because you ran for alderman, correct?
Yes, I did. I did pretty good. But politics is a strange game.
Different than basketball.
Especially in Chicago. So you have
talk about when the Chicago Bulls, Mickey, won their first NBA title. What was that like for you, and did you feel like you were a part of that?
I did feel like I was a part of it. After they had won the first championship game, I sent a letter to Jerry Krause stating how proud I was of what he had accomplished and the players. And doing that, in writing it, I had tears in my eyes because Chicago really deserved to have a championship come to the city, because we gave our blood, sweat, and tears, and finally the organization got it together and brought in the championship team.
What did you think of Michael Jordan?
I think Michael Jordan is one of the phenoms that comes through the league. I think they come every 10 years. You had Dr. J. First, let me go back a little further. You had Connie Hawkins.
Yep.
Then you had Dr. J. Then Magic. Then Michael had come in, Magic and Bird. I had to put them in there together.
Sure.
Then Michael had come in, and now you have 10 years left. You got LeBron James. So it comes a cycle of every 10 years.
And maybe Kobe mixed in before that as well?
Kobe, he's in there with Mike. I want to put him up there with Mike, but I just can't put him in there at that same height. But Kobe is another one.
And tell us now, Mickey Johnson, are you associated with the Chicago Bulls?
Well, I go out and do some appearances for them from time to time. I helped out with the Windy City Bulls when they started their training camp or a recruiting camp. I did a little assistant coaching there. Have done some appearances for them also. But the Bulls have been very good to me. They've been very generous to me. That's why I'm able to see you at the games now.
Right, right.
So everything is going great, and I'm glad that they feel that I'm part of the family.
You're a tribute to Chicago, and congratulations. I enjoyed watching you play back when I was a season ticket holder back in high school.
Thank you.
Well, when we come back, folks, to Chicago Bulls Live, and our thanks to Mickey Johnson, former Bulls player. I'll sit one-on-one with John Paxson, the Executive Vice President of Basketball Operations for the Chicago Bulls. Stay with us on Chicago Bulls Live here on WLS AM 890.
This is the new home of Chicago Bulls basketball. Hear every Chicago Bulls game here. WLS AM 890. Now back to the Chicago Bulls Live.
Welcome back, everybody, to Chicago Bulls Live here on WLS, our weekly program inside the world of Chicago Bulls basketball and the NBA. I'm Steve Cashel. Our next guest, John Paxson, former player, assistant coach, general manager, and now the executive vice president of basketball operations for the Chicago Bulls. Pax, thanks for joining us. How you doing?
Doing great. Always good to talk to you, Steve.
Thank you. Well, John, give us first your impression and assessment of this Bulls season thus far.
Well, it's been, you know, I know that when we started off the year, we made a bunch of changes with our roster. And it's always kind of a unique situation when you make as many changes as we did and trying to get your group together and finding a way to play and have a little bit of success. And, you know, for the most part, we're a team sitting right around 500. I think we'd all like to be a little better than that. But, you know, given kind of how we were constructed and, you know, many of the things we've talked about in the past in terms of, you know, the fact that we haven't shot the ball well this year and those type of things, there's been some, you know, encouraging signs. I mean, obviously, Jimmy having the year that he's having has been just amazing. I mean, he's worked himself into an all-star player now 3 years in a row and now a starter. You know, he's having a terrific year and we're seeing some things. I think one guy that doesn't get a lot of notoriety that's just been really steady for us is Robin Lopez. And, you know, Robin's done a nice job. Both he and Taj, their maturity and their professionalism have been good for us. So it's difficult in this business. You know, when you make a lot of changes, it's difficult enough when you don't, but you know, at this point, we still have half the season left, and, you know, we'll see what we can do with it.
Busy with John Paxson. Pax, as you mentioned, Jimmy Butler headed to his third consecutive NBA All-Star game, first as a starter. Tremendous accomplishment taken by you and your staff with the 30th selection in the 2011 NBA draft. Pax, do you remember the first time you saw Jimmy play?
I remember watching him, you know, on TV and stuff the first time, you know, before I saw him live. And, you know, the one thing about Jimmy was that at Marquette, he got better each year. And, you know, he was just always came across as a tough player. But, you know, it's, if you look back at that draft and everybody says now, you know, wow, he's the 30th pick taken in the draft. But, you know, there are a lot of teams that, you know, looked at him and, you know, didn't see, probably more than anything like a huge upside, because I think, you know, you get in these situations sometimes, you look at players that are four-year players and, you know, you say to yourself, well, you know, they're four-year players for a reason and they don't have great upside. So a lot of people missed on that, you know, when you look back in hindsight, but the reality is that, you know, none of us ever could conceive the player that Jimmy's become. And it's really a testament to him and his work. I mean, this is a guy that, you know, he learned being around a couple of players. I know Lou Alding had great influence on him in terms of showing him what it was to be professional. And Jimmy just has taken this idea of working at a higher level than most, and he's taken to another level. I mean, his workouts in the summer are something that are become kind of legendary. We've had some guys go out and work out with him and stuff. So this is a compliment to him that he has put in the work and he's been rewarded for it. And those are the stories that you like to see and should be told, because he's really made himself into a great player in this league.
Absolutely. Visiting with John Pax, Executive Vice President of Basketball Operations for the Chicago Bulls. Pax, what has Dwayne Wade's presence on this Bulls roster meant for Jimmy?
Well, I think it's been it's really been large, his presence. And Dwayne is he's just such a professional. From the minute that we were able to get him and he came into town, he recognized the dynamic that he was walking into, and that is that he didn't want to throw himself into this and be the alpha male and say, hey, this is my group. All he obviously deferred to Jimmy, but I think behind the scenes you're seeing someone who's had great influence on Jimmy and how he is handling himself. I know that a lot of Dwayne has spent a better part of his career here. He's established himself as a winner, as an all-star, a guy that's going to be in the Hall of Fame. But he's also, proven that he can kind of brand himself in a certain way. And I think, he's having some influence on Jimmy off the court as well as on. But it's really been a blessing in a lot of ways for us. And to be honest with you, he's played very, very well. When we did sign him, we knew that we're going to have to be careful with his – the total number of minutes he played, the back-to-backs that he would face during the year. And, I believe he played 74 games last year, and we wanted to make sure that, we'd hopefully get in that 65 to 70 range this year. And, as of right now, we're on pace to do that. And he takes care of himself. I mean, that's really the thing that stands out. He's one of these guys that knows his body and knows how to take care of himself. So, we're really happy that he's here.
Absolutely. And Pax, can you talk a little bit about the challenges of an NBA team that some categorize as being in the middle, not a favorite to land in the conference finals or win an NBA title necessarily, nor a team that is rebuilding, trying to add just top draft picks. Although you could talk about, 25 teams say, what is Washington doing? What are the Bulls doing? What are the Pacers doing? What are the Knicks doing? I mean, what's it like to be kind of in that middle right there and trying to build that thing back up?
Well, it's kind of a, I think every team out there finds itself in a different cycle. And, certain teams maybe haven't been in the playoffs for a long time, and their goal is to get to the playoffs. We had a nice streak until last year where we were competitive, and, our reality changed when Derek got hurt and we, he was under contract with us. We were trying to find ways to survive, but what we did was, this past off season, with the changes that we made, moving Derek was kind of the start of it, not re-signing Joakim, who we all, were very, fond of as a player and a person and organization. So that kind of started the process. And even when we did these things in the summer, and even when we talked after the last season ended, we knew it's not going to be something that happens overnight. It rarely does in this business. And, we didn't know when we made some of these decisions, we didn't know that Dwayne was going to be available when he became available. And the things that we have done here in this last off season and this year have been to, try to get younger, which we've done, again, drafting Denzel, Paul Zipser's getting a little time now, those types of things, and adding to the young guys we have. And even the signings we've made were short-term signings. So we continue to look to the future and trying to find, a way to get difference makers if you possibly can. That's because when you think about it in this league, a lot of teams that are, hovering around 500 or maybe a little above or below, some of them have terrific players. You mentioned Washington. They've got John Wall and Bradley Beal, and I think it shows how difficult it can be to build. But I go back to the fact that, we know this is going to be a little bit of a process here and that it's not going to happen overnight. We're going to continue to try to find ways to get better. We would like to continue to add young talent to our roster. And, every day we look at ways to do that.
Pax, one NBA GM told me it takes about 7 years, according to their calculations, to totally rebuild a team to a top level when totally broken down. How difficult is that for a franchise and fan base and can be a challenge? Because do you believe maybe some of these draft picks can be real crapshoots?
Well, yeah, a lot of it does depend on a certain draft that you're in. I mean, there's some luck involved if you're in a draft where the, you know, it's very talented at the top and, you know, you hit a couple years in a row. I mean, think back to Oklahoma City when within 3-year period, they drafted Durant, Westbrook, and James Harden. Those were all top 4 draft picks, and they hit it, you know, they hit it right. And, you know, they made great decisions in the draft, and, you know, and then they were able to build it back up or build it up quickly. So there's some, you know, fortune as to what the draft is like and how you hit in the lottery and those type of things. But, you know, the way the rules are, you know, when you make that decision, you know, you have to be patient. And I don't know, you know, 7 years, you know, who knows? I know that when we started this thing in 2003, we hadn't been to the playoffs in 5 years or something like that. And we decided to really kind of change course and change culture. And, you know, within 2 years, we were in the playoffs. You know, the rules were different back then. We were able to, buy and trade for a first round pick. You rarely see those types of very high first round pick, the 7th pick with Phoenix that we got the wall with. But you don't see those things much anymore, if at all, because, you know, the rules have changed and the value of picks now, they're going to be even more important with this new collective bargaining agreement because, you know, the rules will allow you to keep the players that you draft. It's going to be very hard for guys to leave an organization just given the amount of money they can make if the guys are really good players. So, but, you know, it's I know it's hard on a fan base. You know, the thing we're trying to do right now is, you know, we know that, you know, at some point, you know, the young guys that we have, we're going to have to play and we're going to have to see what they can do on a consistent basis. You know, but when we made those short-term decisions with Dwayne and Rondo last summer, we were attempting to be competitive. And, you know, we think every day about, you know, the direction and the course that, you know, we take or will be taking at some point along the line, you know, and but those decisions, you know, you can't force something to happen. And, you know, so, but we're always vigilant. We're always, you know, talking to teams and try and find, you know, like everyone, we're trying to find ways to get better.
That's John Paxson, Executive Vice President of Basketball Operations for the Chicago Bulls. When we come back on Chicago Bulls Live, part 2 of my interview with John Paxson, we discuss, among other things, his impression of Fred Hoiberg in his second year as Bulls head coach. Stay with us on Chicago Bulls Live on WLSAM 890.
Everything you need to start your week smarter and happier. Big John and Ray. Monday morning starting at 5 on WLS AM 890.
Welcome back, everyone, to Chicago Bulls Live here on WLS AM 890. I'm Steve Cashel. Now, part 2 of our interview with John Paxson. And I asked John Paxson about Fred Hoiberg, now in his second season as Bulls head coach. Pax telling us last year at the end of the year that Fred needed to improve on certain things or was hoping that last year was a great learning experience for him. So I asked Pax what improvement he has seen thus far this year from Fred Hoiberg.
Well, it started in training camp, and you know, I thought he had a very good camp. Our guys were locked in. I think the thing that where I've seen growth with Fred this year is, you know, he's taken a look at our roster, and he's tried to find ways to put lineups out there that, you know, are successful. And I guess one thing I'd point to is, you know, when you watch us play with our second unit, now it's changed a little bit now with Rondo coming off the bench and him playing some minutes for us. But, you know, he early on kind of took Dwayne out early, maybe 5-6 minutes into the game, allowed Jimmy to play, and then he put Dwayne back with the second unit to give him a ball handler score, kind of, you know, guy that could create his own shot. And, you know, I think he's looked at this, I think where he's grown in many ways is he's looked at these type of things, and he's really trying to put these players in a position to be successful. And, you know, like I was talking to Fred earlier, and, you know, he's looking at lineups that, you know, more effectively work together. You know, Jimmy playing with certain players, how that affects him. And I think, we, you know, lately our fourth quarters have been better for the most part because Fred's been willing to make some adjustments and put more shooters out there on the floor and, you know, those type of things. So I always acknowledge how difficult being a head coach in this business is, because you've got so many things you're trying to deal with on a daily basis. You're trying to manage the 15 players you have in your roster. You can't keep them all happy, but you've got to try to put them in a position to succeed, and that's what every player wants. So I think he's done an admirable job. It is a very difficult position to have to lead every day.
Pax, let's talk about Doug McDermott, Nico Miritich kind of together. They can show flashes of great play, great shooters. You watch them in practice, they don't miss. But then how much of their game is based on confidence? And is there any key, John, to getting them to become more consistent?
Well, you know, it's tough. I mean, the mind of an individual player is unique to that guy. And I think you hit the nail on the head. A lot of it is confidence. Sometimes you see players, and it's not just Doug and Nico, but players, they make a few shots early in a game and, you know, their confidence is soaring and they just ride that confidence. Other times you see them miss a few and, you know, they ride that confidence wave in a negative way. So, I don't know, you know, what you can do outside of continuing to try to put them in positions where they get open shots, but it's up to them to knock them down. And we've talked about this a lot. I mean, you know, we have confidence in both Doug and Nico. The one issue has been consistency. You know, you get a good game and maybe one where you're not so good. And that puts your coaching staff in a difficult position. And, you know, but again, this is the NBA, and nobody's going to feel sorry for you when you lose, and nobody's going to feel sorry as a player if your shot's not going in. You got to try to, you know, get yourself out of it. And, you know, I always felt like my role basically as I got into my career was to knock down shots. And when I have games where I'm maybe getting a little slump or something like that, I'd take it personally, but I wouldn't dwell on it. I'd say, you know what, tonight I'm going to go out and I'm going to knock down shots. And, you know, you just have to believe in yourself as much as anything, because, you know, you look at them shoot it mechanically. They have great form shooting the ball. The ball comes off their hand the right way, gets to the basket quick. And, you know, so it's nothing physically that, you know, you can point to and say, you know, we need to correct this. But, a lot of it comes down to the mental aspect and oftentimes the shot selection that they take. That's their responsibility as players to, you know, to study themselves, study the game, study their team, and, make best use of the minutes that they get.
Visiting with John Pax. And Pax, final question. This is the first season, of course, of the Windy City Bulls in the D-League playing at Hoffman Estates. What kind of advantage is this for the Bulls basketball operations staff, having the Windy City Bulls?
Well, I think it's going to become more and more of an advantage for us. We've used it a little bit this year. We've gotten, you know, a few guys out there. The great thing is with the proximity of it, we've had a few instances where we oversend some players over to play one night, and then the next day they're practicing or playing, you know, for us, in an NBA game. With the new CBA and the way that's going to impact it, I think down the road teams will have more control over more players that maybe aren't on their NBA roster, and that could be a real help too. But we're thrilled, and you know, just the proximity of it to us, and the ability to have guys. You know, when Doug McDermott had that concussion and went through that whole protocol, and it took him a while to get back, we were able to, you know, because I think it was a time where we had a bunch of games going on, and so we didn't have quality practice time for our team, and we were able to put him with the Windy City Bulls and let him practice a little bit and kind of get his legs underneath him. And, you know, just right there was a benefit for us. So we're still figuring out, you know, ways to use it. You know, it's in its infancy with us, but, you know, we're thrilled. And every team in the league is going to have a minor league team, you know, that is theirs here very, very shortly. And it's going to become a real important developmental tool as we go forward over the next 5 to 10 years, and we're looking forward to using it the right way.
Pax, thanks so much for your time.
Okay, Cash.
That's John Paxson, Executive Vice President of Chicago Bulls Basketball Operations. Time for a break here on Chicago Bulls Live. When we come back, Chuck Swirsky with former Bulls head coach and current NBA analyst Doug Collins. Stay with us on WLS AM 890.
To make your drive home a little easier, Steve Dahl is here. 2 till 6 every weekday afternoon on WLS AM 890. Now back to Chicago Bulls Live.
Welcome back, everyone, to Chicago Bulls Live here on WLS AM 890. Our final guest of this program is Doug Collins, former Bulls head coach, who recently visited with our Chuck Swirsky. They begin by talking about Doug's famous Sports Illustrated cover shot, which was taken back in the 70s while Doug was playing college ball at Illinois State.
Where is that Sports Illustrated picture of yourself on the cover? Is it in a frame somewhere in your house?
I do have one in my office in Arizona, my home in Arizona. I do not have one in Chicago, but it's interesting, Chuck. So many arenas that I go in, places I go, people will have that, and I say, "Will you sign this for me?" And it was.
How many years ago was that?
That was 1973. It was my senior year at Illinois State, and it just so happened that Curry Kirkpatrick, who was one of the great writers for the magazine, covered college basketball. He came in to see me play, and on the particular night he saw me play, I had 57 points in the game.
Wow.
And so I ended up going on the cover. He was doing an article on the guards, college, the senior guards at that point in time. So just so happened that I had that game, and so my picture went on the cover. So I've been actually on two covers. I was there on that one, and then when we played Portland in 77, there's a picture of me on a drive against Bill Walton and stuff. So I've been on there twice.
So here Doug Collins from a small town in Illinois is on the cover of Sports Illustrated. Do you remember the shoot that they did for the cover shot?
Of course. Yeah, I remember.
Because you're in your letterman's coat.
I was a senior at Illinois State, as I said before. I'd just come back from a class, and they had it all set up at Illinois State to take the pictures. And so I spent probably about 35 or 40 minutes with them taking pictures, and then we had to run right down to go to practice and all. So I sure remember the day. It was in January. It was really, really cold outside, as it can be in Illinois at that time of the year. But what an honor. You know, what an honor. I mean, Chuck, you said it. I grew up in Benton, Illinois, a town of about 7,000 people. And if you would have told me when I was 16 years old I could have had 43 minutes in the NBA, I would have taken it, and I'm starting my 44th year.
How about that? So when you received the copy of the magazine, do you remember that day you got it in the mail?
I do. They sent me a copy, and it was sort of interesting because it was sort of the Sports Illustrated jinx. That day I sort of hurt my thumb in practice. You know, it was the old Sports Illustrated jinx. Now, I didn't end up not missing any games, but sure, I remember getting it and just sort of looking at it and just thinking, wow, I mean, never in my wildest dreams did I think something like that could ever happen.
Well, and then you went to the drugstore and bought all the copies.
I wish I would have had some money to be able to do that. I didn't have $10 in my pocket to do that back then.
But you know what? As we're discussing this, I can vividly see that red and black Letterman's coat. And here you were, as you later became the number one overall draft pick in the NBA by Philadelphia. But let's get back to college for a moment, and let's talk a little about your upbringing, especially with your parents.
Yeah.
Give me an idea about the way they raised you.
Well,
were they strict? Were they tough? Did they kind of pull back?
You know what? I'm very much an achiever. Even I've been that way as a little kid. And what I mean by that is, you know, I'm a perfectionist at heart, and I've always been very hard on myself. So I didn't need any of that from my parents, you know, that kind of motivation or structure or whatever. I always was afraid of letting them down, not doing the right things. Mm-hmm. I was very blessed to grow up in a community. My dad actually was the county sheriff.
Really?
And so you can look it up on the internet or whatever, but it's now a museum where I grew up. I lived there for 4 years when my dad was sheriff. But I said I was Opie. My dad was sheriff. My uncle was a deputy. My grandmother was the cook. And the cells were downstairs, and my room was upstairs. And now they've turned that into a museum. John Malkovich grew up in Benton, Illinois, so they have a bunch of his stuff in there, whatever. But it's where I grew up, and, my dad, when he would bring somebody in to lock them up or whatever, I think I was between the ages of 5 and 9 when I lived in the jail there. But he would bring me down and say, this is what happens when you take something that doesn't belong to you and you get locked up, or this is something when you break the law, or this is something when you drive and drink or whatever. Yeah. So, I mean, I was always very fearful. I have an incredible respect for the law and law enforcement. And so, because that's how I grew up, my mother was a very hardworking lady. She used to work in a lot of the department stores in Benton, Illinois. So two hardworking parents, had an older sister. My sister Linda, who's 5 years older than me, had a younger brother Jeff, who was 4 years younger than me. So,
was your dad a sports fan, or did he ever coach you?
No, my dad loved to fish. He was a sports fan, but I think the thing I really respect about my dad, you know, amongst a lot of things, Chuck, he died when he was 57 as a young man with cancer. So, I mean, I wish he could have seen a little bit later of my life and watched me play more in Philly and watch my grandkids grow. I mean, my children grow uh-huh. and my grandkids. But he was a very quiet man, and he would come to the games, and he would sit there. He wouldn't say anything. And come home, he never really called me by my name. He always called me son. And he would just say, son, you know, I'm proud of you. That was sort of the extent of it. He loved to cook. And so I used to bring my teammates over on days of game, and he would cook us a meal for the day of the game. So he really enjoyed doing that. So it was good. But like I said, you know, he got sick at a very young age and passed with lung cancer at age 57. So he didn't get to see a lot of the things, a lot of the blessings that have really come about in my life.
Were you heavily recruited?
Chuck, I was 6 feet tall, weighed 130 pounds my junior year in high school.
Wow.
So my junior in high school, which was 1968, I did not start for my high school team. I was seventh man on my high school team. Benton High School, for a lot of people who don't know it now because the program has really deteriorated, but my high school coach, Rich Heron, was there. We were the number one team in the state 2 years in a row when I was a freshman and sophomore. I did not play on that team, but being a Benton Ranger and having a jersey and being on that high school team was something that meant a lot. And so I think I figured it up. My high school coach was there at Benton for about 30 years before he went to Southern Illinois and coached the Salukis, where he won 3 Missouri Valley titles in a row and stuff. It was just a brilliant coach, so far ahead of his time and such a huge part of who I am. But my senior year, I grew to about 6'2.5". I really had an explosive junior to senior summer. Things took off for me. Ended up averaging about 27 a game my senior year. Was recruited, had 100 scholarship offers.
Wow.
But I ended up falling in love with Illinois State. I went there for my visit, and the coach there at the time was Dr. James Colley, who happened to coach my high school coach at McKendree. Mm. And I went up there on the visit. There was a guy named Tom Sirks that played on the team. He had an old beat-up Volkswagen. We drove around. We played ball. We ate at McDonald's. And I just was so comfortable. I was really, at that point in time, I think people would see me now and don't think that could ever be. But back then, I was pretty shy, and you know, I mean, basketball was my coming out party. It gave me a lot of confidence to be able to do a lot of things.
And the continuity, was that the same coach that you ended up playing for all 4 years?
No, after my freshman year, back then you had to play freshman basketball, mm-hmm. which was great. I loved that. Loved my freshman year. It was a chance to get acclimated. What we did a lot, we used to play the prelim game to the varsity game.
Sure.
So people would come in and watch who the team was going to, yeah. who the freshman
well,
team.
Well, those old UCLA stories
exactly.
where then Lou Alcindor, now Kareem Abdul-Jabbar,
right.
they would take that freshman team and beat the varsity.
Exactly, exactly. So I played freshman ball. And, you know, it was a great way to get acclimated to school because I really took my studies seriously. You know, I'm a first-team academic All-American, and I'm in the College Academic Hall of Fame that Dick Emberg has. So, I never had any dreams about being an NBA player, so I felt like I wanted to be a great student, and I wanted to be the best player I could be. Dr. Colley got multiple sclerosis after my first year there, and Milt Weisbecker, who was the athletic director there, he was from Mount Vernon, Illinois, which is about 20 miles away from Benton, and he took on a huge role in my life because the day I got in my car to go to school, my mom and dad divorced. And so I drove up to school, and I was sort of by myself, and I pulled up in front of the dorm, and kids were being checked in the dorm. Their moms and dads were there, and you know, I just sort of looked up, and I counted up 10 floors, 1016 Wilkins, that's going to be my home. And you know, had a few tears and said, okay, let's go. And checked myself in my room. I had a great college roommate, Craig Spires from Joliet West. He was a really good player. He played on the team and just wanted to study. So he and I really were a great fit as roommates. We had a lot in common, and we really enjoyed each other's company. And I think we really helped each other out, stay really structured. You know, that freshman year, sometimes you can get off track sometimes being away from home. But I've always been so disciplined with that. So Milt Weisbecker, who was the athletic director, he did something, I mean, that nobody else had the courage to ever do. He hired the first black coach in Division I basketball, Will Robinson, out of Detroit. And Coach Robinson had been there for 30 years, one of the all-time great coaches, high school coaches, great star players, Spencer Haywood, you know, Mel Daniels, Ralph Simpson, great, great, great athletes. A bunch of his players went on to play football. They played Major League Baseball. He was just so ahead of his time. And he came to Illinois State at that point in time, 1970, Central Illinois, first black coach. And I just fell in love with him.
Did it raise some eyebrows?
Oh, of course it raised. At that point in time, you know, I mean, Chuck, I was raised in an all-white community, and you know, a lot of you got a black coach. Is, you know, what's Doug? You know, is he going to stick around or whatever? I met him, and the first day I met him, I fell in love with him. I looked into his eyes, and he said, Champ, he called me Champ all the time. He said, Champ, he said, I've watched you play on tape or whatever. And he said, I think I can get you to where you want to go if you'll just trust me. Mm. And I said, I'll trust you. Wow. And I worked, man. I worked. I, you know, Chuck, the one thing I do pride myself on is I don't think there's anybody ever worked harder at the game than I did. Probably to a point where I broke down later in the NBA because I never let myself rest. I was always worried about losing my job. So I just drove myself.
So you played with an edge of insecurity, or did you?
I just
play?
Well, you know, I mean, probably a little bit. You know, I mean, you know, growing up the way I did, and I was just always, I always felt that I was going to lose my job. You know, and so I said, I always said, nobody's taking my job. Nobody's going to take my job. And I was a four-time All-Star, and I said, nobody's taking my job. I just, that's the way I'm wired. You know, if I walk into a room and you and I are taking a test, you know, I'm going to look at you and I'm, you know, Chuck, I'm going to beat you on this test. You know, that's just the way I'm driven. So probably a little insecurity along the way and probably a little fear of failure. Sure.
Chuck Swirsky with former Bulls head coach Doug Collins. That will do it for this edition of Chicago Bulls Live. Many thanks to our executive producer, Dave Zaslowski. For Chuck Swirsky, I'm Steve Cashel. Thanks for listening. Coming up next, our Bulls pregame show as the Bulls take on the Sacramento Kings at the United Center. Thanks for listening to Chicago Bulls Live here on WLSAM 890.